Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Huge episode today. Today we have four rounds in the magazine. Round number one, running through the jungle with my M16. What smell is in my nostrils? It is simple green. We took to our social media accounts to see what smells reminded you of military life the most. The results? Well, you sick fucks came through again. Round number two, set your watches to motivation o'clock because we have Navy SEAL, author, and leadership guru Jocko Willink on the show. And boy, does he think Kate is a big ol' double L weenie loser. Round number three, there's a group online trying to make money off a hot new fad. It's called the military diet. And no, it's not just rippets and cheap cigarettes. Finally, round number four, the U.S. Navy says it'll name an aircraft carrier after Doris Miller, the African-American mess attendant who historically... heroically leapt to combat during the bombing of Pearl Harbor. It's an incredible story and so well-deserved. Wait until you hear this tale of American heroism. All of that today is going to be brought to you by our good friends at Simply Safe. And we're going to bring in longtime stoolie FDR to read the Simply Safe ad. Take it away, Mr. President.
Think about security Fortune 500 companies use. They need to know police are going to be on the scene immediately. This is exactly the kind of security you get with Simply Safe. If there's a break-in, Simply Safe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account of the crime. And that means police dispatched up to 350% faster than a normal burglary alarm. With Simply Safe, you get comprehensive protection for your home. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you to anyone approaching your home. Entry, motion, and glass break sensors guard the inside. Plus, Simply Safe protects your home from fires, water damage, and carbon monoxide poisoning. It's all monitored 24/7 by live security professionals. You can set up your system yourself with no tools needed. Or Simply Safe experts can do it for you. And it's only 50 cents a day with no contracts. Go to simplysafe.com/ZBT today to get free shipping on your order, plus a 60-day money-back guarantee. That's simplysafe.com/ZBT to save money on your home security today. Simply Safe.
I think the Friday's just like...
Right.
Especially when I'm up here, it is different. Like, I do the same, almost the same level of content, the amount of content when I'm at home here. It just feels so different in the office.
It's nice to have you here in person.
Well,
yeah.
I like being here. I like to hop in with the other shows and do the other things. And it's great, and it's nice to see everybody. But there's something about, like, staying in a hotel that it just drains you.
It crushes the soul a little bit after a while.
It does. You go by the same person. You're like, hey, Daryl, thanks. Thanks for holding the elevator again, Daryl. I appreciate it, Daryl.
It's always a Daryl.
It's always a Daryl. And we're going to be meeting another Daryl when we go out to the Air Force Academy. I've never been. I was thinking about the other day. I don't know if I've ever been and just stayed in Colorado for a day.
I have never been to Colorado.
I've been to, like, Denver, like, the airport. But I've never gone outside and been out in Colorado.
Well, if you're in the Colorado Springs area, February 15th, we're going to be out there at Falcom Stadium, U.S. Air Force Academy for the Kings versus Avalanche game. So really excited for that, the whole ZBT crew, including Captain Cons. He's not here today, but he will be with us next week and with us when we go in February.
He's really excited. That was his first choice. He went to West Point, but his first choice was to go to Air Force Academy. So it'll be nice for him to be able to step inside that stadium that he really wanted to be a part of the home team. He did get to go there as an away guy, but it'll be nice for him to feel like a part of the Air Force Academy for the first time.
To really feel like he belongs.
It's nice. You know, it's almost like a wish is getting granted for Cons to be able to go.
Right.
To do hockey content. He's a huge hockey guy. Some of the other Spittin' Chicklets folks will be here, our hockey podcast.
Yeah.
Ice hockey podcast, as Kate likes to say. Yeah.
Yes, an ice hockey podcast, not a roller hockey podcast. But yes, Captain Cons will finally get to Rome Air Force Academy instead of West Point where he got stuck.
Right.
So that'll be February 15th. Hit us up. Reach out if you have cool stuff to do in the area. We'll be there that entire weekend.
Yeah, we were looking through some of the stuff. Hot Springs might be in play, but we want to do some video content. So if you go to the Air Force Academy, if you're around the Air Force Academy, or if you're just going to be there for the Stadium City, hit us up in our DMs. We want to come out and hang out and be there. We're going to have a meet and greet too, so if you want to come out to a bar before, we're going to be there with New Amsterdam Vodka. Should be great.
I'm excited to see how quick I get drunk with the altitude.
I want to get inside one of their dorms, their fancy dorms they call it.
They don't
call it barracks now. They call it dorms.
True.
And I want to know, because you know, whenever you walk into a Marine Corps barracks or an Army barracks, you kind of know what you're going to smell. It's going to smell like ass.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what the Air Force Academy barracks smells like.
Clean ass.
Probably clean ass. Speaking of smells.
Oh, my God. What is that? Round number one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That's spicy, my friend.
Yeah.
Spicy meatball. My goodness. That's right. For round number one, we went to Twitter and Instagram and asked you, the listener, what smell immediately reminds you of the military? And we're talking, if you smelled it again, it would take you right back to that place and time in the military. And we got, combined between Twitter and Instagram, over 1,000 answers from listeners going through
them. Well, we got 1,000 replies. I think we actually got like 20 things.
Yeah, because people had like,
it's the same shit.
A lot of the same answers. And there's like a top 10 that everybody, I think, universally, but we also got some really unique and cool answers too. Start with us, Captain Cons. He's not here today, but he said footballs.
What a terrible answer.
What a weird answer. Footballs and caviar.
Terrible. I guess like, that's way an to officer. Force it. Oh, yeah, we get it. You like football.
Right. And caviar? I mean, again, I'm enlisted, so I'm not sure. But
cigars.
That's, our guy Kyle, who does an amazing job on our social media, said, a sleeping bag you never cleaned, but always smashed down and put away after the field, and always said you'd clean it next time, but you never did till you turned it back into SIF. That a lot of people said just walking into the SIF, where they keep all the gear, that smell is just...
And it's unbelievable that it smells that way, because you know everything's there clean because you have to do it for hours to get it back in there.
They turn you away so many times. But yes, a sleeping bag, like moldy gear. There's something about moldy gear. He also said boot camp originals. This, I didn't know this as a lady that didn't give us the colognes. Cobra 65 cologne for men and Bulldog USMC cologne.
See, I didn't have those. I had the Aqua Velva is the one that we had, the blue.
A ton of people said that.
And they would. Do you know what they would do?
No.
So whenever you would do, so you'd have this, the drill instructor would come out and he would be like, scuzz brush the bulkhead, scuzz brush the old bulkhead, aye sir.
Yeah.
And then you would take your little rag and they would dump, I think it was Gain. They would dump Gain laundry detergent all over the deck, and then you had to make it really wet and clean it. And then after you're done and you dry the deck, then they would take one recruit, would give his Aqua Velva to the drill instructor, and then the drill instructor would come through and just pour it all the way through, and it would just smell like Aqua Velva to cover up the ass of the 60 or 70 dudes that were in there.
We did the scuzz, but we did not. They did not come through with the Aqua Velva. But yeah, a ton of people said Aqua Velva, but the Bulldog cologne. He has the picture of the bottle here.
He still has it.
Oh my God.
We make fun of me for being ate up still, like about being an ate up Marine. Kyle has all the stuff. He even had like his green monster, like all the different knowledge questions that you're supposed to have, like the history of the Marine Corps, all the life-saving steps and shit like that. He still has his green monster. That's a motivator.
Yeah, we're making fun of you, Kyle. You're a dork for keeping all that stuff. Just kidding. You're fantastic. Other common answers were CLP, which is what you use to clean your rifles and all that stuff. Unless you're pregnant. That stuff gets deep into your skin and hands, too. You smell that forever afterwards. And remember they called them donkey dicks?
Oh, yeah.
The big old brush that you, like, go up to the armor window. I need a donkey dick, please.
There was a kid that whenever I was in Okinawa, he asked one of our staff sergeants, he was like, why is it called a donkey dick? He's like, seriously?
Yeah.
Because it looks like a donkey dick.
It's a big old hanging donkey dick.
What does CLP stand for?
Cleaning lubricant product.
I'm glad you answered that, because I was like, gosh, I really have no idea. I just know chemicals. Chemicals loose and pouring on the... No. Simple Green, Fabuloso, and Pine Sol in the cleaning department.
Simple Green is my personal number one answer.
Yeah.
If I smell Simple Green, it immediately takes me back. Brasso, too. Simple Green and Brasso are my number number one and number two.
A lot of people said Brasso, and there was another kind of like shoe shiner stuff that they had to use. But Simple Green, my God, it was like the cheapest possible. I'm sure the government had a contract with them to get it in bulk on the... And they never gave you real paper towels. It was always like a newspaper material, so you could never quite scrub anything clean, and then you get bitched at and screamed at for not scrubbing it clean. But yeah, any kind of like below name brand cleaning product. Ton of people said JP8 and diesel fuel. Also, Porta Shitters at CalWill713 said, when I walk by a porta potty that hasn't been cleaned in a month and it's 100 degrees outside, anybody, whatever branch you're in, you know that
it's
smell.
The blue liquid that goes in there that everybody can smell. Yeah. You walk in, you smell the blue liquid, it immediately takes you back. When we went out to San Francisco and I was hanging out there, whenever we did the hand gliding video, I walked into a porta shitter because I had to really go because we stopped at that fancy...
Yeah, it just takes you right back.
It does.
MRE chemical heating packet, chewing tobacco, the dip spit, the cans of dip spit. Mm-hmm. A ton of people were saying French Creek, like 10 different people said it in the answers. And then it smelled like shit. I don't know what French Creek is, but
it's a place on Camp Lejeune.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay. So I believe you guys, if that's what you're saying. And a lot of women were saying cheap Bath and Body Works sprays. At Diane St. Patrick said, Victoria's Secret body spray is all we had in basic to feel like females. To this day, I cringe in that store. We didn't have Victoria's Secret body spray when I was in. I don't know what but I definitely know when I got to MOS school, like, after the showers, after PT, women would, like, douse themselves in
shit. Axe is obviously, like, any basic boot smells like Axe. You just try to cover up the smell of your own nuts with Axe body spray, and that's the way it goes down. My one that I thought of last night whenever we were sitting there, wheat snack bread.
Oh, yeah.
Wheat snack bread has a very distinct smell.
Crack that sucker open.
Obviously, Brasso. Another one was Jaeger bombs. Jaeger bombs was a huge one for me. I think it's because I was just a Jaeger bomb guy.
So in the barracks, that's what you guys were. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's like your smell.
You know why? Because I think you're a Marine and you hear... Did you ever hear the rumor that Jaeger bomb has like deer blood in it?
Yes, I heard that.
Because they got the deer with the antlers on the bottle?
Yeah, and that's like, why it's so dark.
Drinking deer blood? That's fucking badass.
That is badass.
That's so badass.
It's like the only form of black licorice that's tolerable, I would say.
Oh, God.
That's true. And then just the smell of general ass. For me, personally, I think the one smell that I could still remember and have it in my little olfactory senses is whenever I think of this bongo van that we had in Japan. I remember getting dropped. We had, whenever I first got to Okinawa, you get picked up by whatever section is going to take you, and like you're going to be part of their platoon or whatever. Well, one of my corporals showed up, and there's this bongo van, and it looks kind of like the Scooby-Doo van.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit Scooby-Doo-ish, and they slide the door open. There's like three dog kennels in the back, and whenever I got in, everybody else is having a good time. They're talking, they're eating, they're doing whatever, and they're like introducing themselves to me. I'm introducing myself to them, and I'm like struggling to breathe because it smells so
bad. Yeah.
And they're not acting like it bothers them at all. And I'm like, oh my God, how are they even talking in here? It smells
totally
so,
nosebleed to it.
So bad. And then after a while, it took me like 3 months. Then we picked up other new people.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's struggling with the smell.
Yeah.
I remember that
back in the day. Those are good. And you also said Febreze on field day because that's the making things smell good is. Like cleaning to, I think, a lot of guys in the barracks. So half-ass cleaning job, but then just spray the shit out of everything with Febreze and make it smell like it's clean. I know for me, the burn pit smell will be forever ingrained in my mind for my first deployment. There was a lot of small outposts where literally it was like the burn pit, a mud wall, and then like me sleeping right next to it. And the smell of like burning rubber, plastic shit, all that stuff, just there's a very specific like... As you're smelling it, you're like, this isn't good.
I wish that they had like a scratch and sniff movie. You know, like whenever in Jarhead, when Swofford is standing there and I forget who plays the officer. He comes out. He's a lieutenant colonel. And he says, put that back in there, Swofford. I'm not walking across camp to take my morning glory. And Swofford already has like the diesel fuel burning the shit and he's stirring it. I wish that civilians at that point could just walk up to their TV, scratch and sniff it and be like, oh, that's why they complain about burn pits.
Yeah, that's what it smells like. That smell will forever. That a lot of my smells were like deployment smells. It smells that every now and then I'll catch a hint of something here in New York City that I'm like, oh my God, that tape. Burning
walk past
garbage.
A dumpster on 27th Ave.
Yeah, the Afghans would burn in their bazaars. They would burn the garbage a lot of times. So that the burn pits mixed with the burning garbage smell. And then we were always sitting on like these big Persian rugs. And if you ever smell one up close, that like there's a certain smell.
Chai
that just,
tea will get you.
So I went into a store here that sells these beautiful Persian rugs. And I was like, oh my God, it took me right back. And that, and then somebody else, I saw someone else say this, but the cheap, they would get really cheap Chinese cigarettes and stuff called like Pines.
Yeah.
And they had a totally different
smell. What was your
go-to
deployment cigarette?
Pines.
Pines?
Pines
was... I was a Miami's guy.
I smoked so many Pines that like when it comes down to the time for like claiming burn pit stuff or whatever, I'm like... It's actually probably all the Pines I smoked.
Whenever you would go into somebody's house, like a local's house, did you ever see anything and they offer you and you're like, hell yes, I'll have that.
Well, the tea for sure.
I got offered 7-Up one time.
Stew?
They had 7-Up.
7-Up.
I was
Fancy
like, this
boys.
Is fucking unbelievable. 7-Up.
All right.
Yeah.
I like it. Make it yours. Yeah. You know, make it yours. We got a bunch of other good answers too, though. At D Marisak 885 said, wet poncho that you forget to take out of your ruck. Any wet gear is just. And in that same vein, at OXC31, the weird smell a canteen gives off that has old water in it since the last field exercise.
I love that smell.
Ooh, it would get gross brown film around the mouth of it.
Yeah.
You like that?
I do kind of like that. I like that. I think because my personal favorite, if I'm drinking water, my number one water source is brand new hose water.
Okay.
I love the rubbery taste of a brand new hose. And I like the smell of a beach ball.
Okay. Yeah. Big rubber guy. Yeah. That's kind of your vibe.
Yeah.
Dirk Bay said, pine trees on a humid morning reminds me of Fort Benning, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I got that. I remember Paris Island real early in the morning going on hikes, and there is that like pine needly smell. Burnt paracord, aka 550 cord, was another one. I like Tegan G said floor wax, and then hot paper right out of the copier. A lot of people who aren't in the certain MOSs, like that smell will probably forever be ingrained because it's like endless paperwork and all that stuff.
My buddy Chris Diaz, who was killed in Afghanistan, I hadn't thought about this in years. He was a sick fuck.
Yeah.
Like just a straight up sick fuck. So we would have to clean all these dog kennels out all the time. And whenever you're grooming, there'd be a grooming station where each day or every other day, all the dog handlers would take their dog out. They put them on this big pallet and everybody did it in the same spot. Well, imagine what it looks like after you 25 German Shepherds and you're de-shedding them, how much hair there is.
Yeah.
And so you have to get rid of it somehow. Normally you would put it in like a garbage bag or something like that and throw it away. Not Diaz. Diaz liked to burn it.
So hair.
And he would get this big mop bucket.
That's so unnecessary.
It really is. And he would fill it with this hair. And he would sit on the bleachers. There's bleachers outside so like our NCOs and shit like that could like evaluate what we were doing with the dogs.
Yeah.
And he would burn all of it. And I remember our guy.
He would just set it on fire, just like set a bucket of hair on fire.
Yeah, like so he would put like a little – he would get like some – a roll-up ball of, like, cardboard or something like that, light that on fire, and then put that in the middle of all the dog hair. And he would do it, like, just out sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
And I remember one of our sergeants came out one day. He did it, like, all the time. And Sergeant McDonald finally saw him doing it. And whenever he came out there, he's like, Diaz, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm just burning the hair, Sergeant. Like, I'm burning the hair. He's like, why the fuck are you doing that? Like, why don't you just throw it away? He's like, I just like the smell.
Yeah, the smell of burnt hair.
Burnt like dog hair.
Turd covered in burnt hair.
Burnt dog hair. And he would like legitimately sit by it like it was his incense. Like he would just hang out and smell
okay.
it. Diaz was
okay.
a wild card.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Speaking of wild cards, we're going to bring one in now. We talked about it on Twitter. We talked about it at the beginning of the episode. Wait no further. Here is Jocko Willink. All right, now on Zero Block 30, I'm privileged to have probably our most requested guest that we've ever had since we started this show. Whenever we send out wish lists at the beginning of the year, who do you want to see on ZBT? Jocko Willink is probably the number one answer that we get because he's got a Navy SEAL background. He trained some of the most prominent Navy SEALs that are in media now. Movies are made about him and all that shit with SEAL Team 6. So we want to start off our podcast like we do with every single military member that comes on. It's the question people want to know. How many people have you killed? I'm just kidding.
We're just kidding.
That's not where we're going to start. I'm just kidding.
We're just goofing with you. But really, how many? No, I'm just kidding. Though, as Chops is already giving a bit of an intro there, for anybody who doesn't know, and I feel like most of our listeners would know, but anybody new out there listening, Jocko Willink is a retired U.S. Navy SEAL officer with more than 20 years of service from enlisted to officer, so he's seen a little bit of our side, too.
A little bit of Mustang action, yeah.
He's got deployments from Asia to Europe to the Middle East, where he commanded SEAL Team 3's infamous task unit Bruiser. He hosts the top-rated Jocko podcast, advises and instructs as co-founder of Echelon Front, has 1.1 million Instagram followers, slightly more than me.
I'm sure you didn't think that when you were in the SEALs that you'd be having over a million followers on Instagram.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I was a little bit intimidated when I heard you were coming on because I feel like you and I could not be more opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to wake up around 9:45 every day, and then I stare at the ceiling for a while. Then I grab a stale Entenmann donut off the top of my fridge. I stare a little bit more at my cabinet while I'm making coffee. And the only sweatband I wear is when I brush my teeth and wash my face. So I was like, oh, man, he's going to hate me. But yeah.
I don't necessarily hate you. I'm just disappointed.
No!
That's even worse.
Damn it.
That's even worse. I want to start off with some of the questions, maybe one that you haven't got. One of your former sailors is actually making big-time news because he just became an astronaut. Can you tell us a little bit what it was like working with Johnny Kim?
Yeah, Johnny Kim, he was a new guy in tasking at Bruiser. So we formed up to get ready for deployment in 2005. And, you know, he just checked in and was a new guy. He was a medic. He was a sniper. He's a fantastic guy. He's super humble, very nice, was a great SEAL. And from there, he went, got picked up for an officer program. He wanted to be a doctor, which I actually sat on his officer review board. And when I did, I remember telling him, and it was me and then two medical officers, because he wanted to be, you know, he was going to become a doctor. So it was me and two Navy doctors. And Mike, like they said, okay, do you have any questions? And I said, you know, Johnny, I don't like hospitals. I don't like nurses. I don't like doctors. I don't like medicine. I don't like any of that. I have no idea why you would want to do this at all. But if I was going to have someone take care of my kids, it'd be you. So let's make this happen. He's just a great guy. And then he went from there, went to the University of San Diego. From University of San Diego, he actually got into Harvard Medical School. And then from Harvard Medical School, applied to be an astronaut and you know, got picked up. I actually wrote a letter of recommendation for each one of those phases of his life.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. I have all those recommendations that I wrote for him to go to Harvard, to go to become an astronaut and to become an officer. So that's pretty cool. But he's just a great guy. He's fantastic. It's no surprise that he's an astronaut, that he's done everything he's done because he's a fantastic guy.
And your career has kind of touched a lot of people who have big-time resumes like that, that people who follow the military at all, you know some of the people that you've worked with on SEAL Team 3. Do you feel like sometimes, like you go to a guy who's Johnny Kim, for example, that's obviously a dude who wakes up on his own. He's very, very motivated, self-starter, doing all that stuff. You don't go to Harvard Medical School and become an astronaut without being a self-starter. How do you relate leadership style to, say, a guy or a lady who is working in an S1 shop and he's got a brand new Lance Corporal that's not exactly motivated, that joined the military or the Marine Corps because they wanted to get away from student loans and things like that, and now they kind of regret their decision? Where would you be at as a leader with somebody who's like that?
The biggest thing, and this works in, you know, I work with a bunch of civilian companies too. And, you know, with the military, you can't say, hey, if you work harder, I'll give you more money. That just doesn't work. You don't have the opportunity. You can't pay somebody more money. They're going to get paid what they're going to get paid. It is what it is. But there's actually something that's more powerful than money as an incentive, and that is control over your own fate. So anytime you get somebody that's working and maybe they're not into it, if you say, okay, hey, I want you to run this project. I want you to run this training mission. I want you to take charge of this thing. And I'm not talking about like give them some minuscule, you're in charge of taking out the garbage. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying you actually put them in charge of something. You show them that you believe that they have potential. You trust their judgment. And then you give it to them. And when people are given ownership and they're given control over their own destiny, they have a much greater chance of getting engaged with it and working hard to do a good job.
Damn. Yeah, that'll do it.
That works out well. Your personality on social media and on YouTube and the things that you've done, it's always been larger than life. Did you discover that in the SEALs, in the military, or is your personality really going after it? Is that who you've always been?
I mean, honestly, I'm the same now that I have always been. I don't act any different. I don't go, I'm gonna go on a podcast with someone. I better go get into character. No, this is just who I am. It's always been this way. I guess the biggest difference when I got out of the military is, you know, a little window opened into my personality in life because of doing interviews and being on social media and doing podcasts. So people kind of, okay, this is me. But yeah, I don't act any different. I've always been kind of doing what I'm doing. So
and
no major discovery there.
I see that it really does strike a chord with people. Every day almost you're posting, it's kind of infamous now at this point amongst, I know you have kind of like a cult following, but it's a picture of your watch at 3:30 in the morning, 4:15 in the morning, 5 a.m. You're getting up, you're grinding, you're going to the gym. It's the black and white photos of sweat on the floor. It's always pushing towards something and working on leadership. And somebody like me, who's a human dumpster fire, who is just an, I don't know where my car is right now. I don't know. I look at that and I say, for me, that's unachievable. I could never be that. And my stereotype of you kind of is that you're like this perfect person that you, it's that it's easy for you almost. Like, this is just how you are. And like, almost like this perfect.
You've been made into like military Jesus kind of.
Yeah. So what would you say to somebody like me who thinks that you are perfect? Like, do you have any struggles and weaknesses and things like that? Or does
like,
it come
easy? When's
the
last time you sharted your pants, for example? Like that kind of thing. Like.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, that's might be what it seems like from the outside, but hey, when my alarm clock goes off after I've been up all late night, I don't want to get out of bed more than the next human being does. But I also know I kind of have cataloged what it feels like to be lazy. I know what it like to get up at whatever, sleep until like, you know, 7 or something and waste that part of the day. And I know what that feels like later, you know, later you feel, man, I missed out on getting stuff done. So I kind of cataloged that feeling, and I know what that feels like. And that feeling of not getting stuff done, of not moving down the path I want to move down, that feels worse than it feels to get up out of bed in the morning. But yeah, I mean, hey, nothing comes easy to anybody, right? It's not like, you know, I'm the T-1000 Terminator robot,
right?
Whatever. No, yeah. It's not true.
So your work, so with your book, and you have all these leadership principles, you're constantly guiding other folks through, whether it's business or whether it's military, whatever industry you're in. What's something that you're working on right now to better yourself?
I work every day to better myself. And usually when I get done with something, I start something else. You know, that's what I do. You know, right now I'm starting on my next book. You know, I just had this book come out. I mean, actually probably 2 months ago, I started on my next book. So that's, I never really get done and think, okay, cool, now I'm good. I always think, okay, I'm done with that. Now I need to figure out what else I can do to move forward.
And were you always, because you have a bachelor's in English, I saw. And I feel like I don't think like Navy SEAL, this guy's a writer, you know, this guy. And was this always something that you were always writing? You were always looking forward to doing something like writing a book like this? And like all the ones you've written, because you've even done children books that do incredibly well too. There's even a coloring book, and I'm going through it. I'm like, that's so cool. But
yeah, well, that one might be good for you, apparently.
Yeah, I do love crayons. I am a Marine after all. But doing this and writing this, does it, again, like it just seems, does it take you a long time, or do you know, especially because they're all leadership themed? What is it about leadership? Because you talk about when you first joined the SEALs, it was a lot of on-the-job training, and you didn't always have the best leadership yourself. And that was one of the problems with on-the-job training, like having to learn on the job, was that sometimes your leader knew what they were doing, but they didn't quite know how to communicate it. So your big thing now with writing is you're trying to communicate to people how to lead. What are like the keys of that?
Yeah, so you just asked me like 14 questions.
Right.
As I was talking, I was like, uh-oh, oh shit, yeah. Here we go. The ball started rolling. What's your favorite color, and like, what do you like about leadership, and where are we going?
So besides your favorite basketball team and where you served in the Middle East, what's your favorite meal?
Yeah, so my favorite meal is steak. You first started off talking about English.
Yeah.
And when I went to college, because I went to college while I was in the military. You know, I was an enlisted guy. I got commissioned as an officer, but I did this program that doesn't exist anymore where I got commissioned as an officer. When I went from being an E5 at SEAL Team 1, went to 13 with no college, went to 13 weeks of OCS, and then I showed up at SEAL Team 2 as an ensign. So that's what I did. And then a couple of years later, they said, okay, you need to go get your college degree since you don't have one. And I said, okay. They said, what do you want to study? And I said, English. And the reason that I said English is because I realized when I was working as an officer how much writing was going on, whether it was writing, you know, concept of operations, whether it was writing evaluations for guys, whether it was putting in guys for awards. And then on top of that, deciphering what was getting sent to me, whether it was rules of engagement or some directive from up the chain of command. And then on top of all that, I had to communicate with people verbally all the time when you're briefing. So I realized that the best skill that I could have to lead people was to get better at English. So I went to college and studied English. I had no intention. I never thought I would write any kind of book. I never thought I'd really do anything. I mean, I thought I was really just a good SEAL, and that was sort of the limitations of my life. And it's what I really did my whole life. You know, that's all I wanted to do. And I mean, that's reason, if you look at any of the stuff of my military history, there's like four pictures of my entire military career.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I never took any pictures. I never saved anything. I just was doing my job. So,
do you ever regret about that?
What's that?
Do you ever regret about that? That you don't have more like documentation you can go back and scroll the old memory banks?
Totally regret it. It's a bummer. And as a matter of fact, there's a picture of Task Unit Bruiser that's sort of the only picture. It was right before we deployed. And it's us at a big training site. We're standing on our vehicles, and everyone's in the picture, including Ryan Job, including Mark Lee, including Mikey Monsor. We're all in this picture. These are guys that were killed, you know, later. And, you know, Chris Kyle's in there. I mean, everybody that was in Task Unit Bruiser is in it. And I'm not in it. And the reason I'm not in it is because I didn't believe in taking pictures. So, yeah. And you can't tell anyways. I mean,
were they all like, come on, sir, get in here. Let's do it. Come on, Jocko.
You guys are Hollywood. I'm not taking pictures, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, bummer. But I will say this, when we were in Ramadi on that deployment, probably it was pretty quick into it. I told the guys no pictures. And I said, hey guys, start taking pictures, because I could tell that it was going to be, you know, I knew that there was a lot of history happening, not just with my task unit, but with the entire Battle of Ramadi. And then, you know, I was worried that, you know, someone would get killed and we'd have no pictures.
Yeah.
So, I never thought that that's what I would do, but it ended up when I did retire from the military. And once again, for somebody like myself that talks about having a plan and being ready to execute, I when I got out of the military, I was just gonna, you know, I train jiu-jitsu, I have a jiu-jitsu gym, and I was just gonna teach my kids jiu-jitsu, train jiu-jitsu, surf, and hang out. And I ended up working with a company that needed some help with their leadership, and that just expanded until I got to where I am. So,
yeah, I would say I cannot believe you somehow managed to answer my 7-minute question. You managed to hit all the points somehow.
That was impressive.
Mean,
yeah,
that was a test.
Attention to detail, being able to go through complicated problems and get out on the other side.
Yeah.
For people who don't know what Ramadi was like, because I remember whenever I landed in Fallujah in 2007, there was two talks about the area of operations that Marines primarily had in Al-Anbar at the time, and that was in Fallujah, and it was in Ramadi in 2005 and 2006 as well. Can you explain what it was like on the ground in Ramadi?
Yeah, I mean, there was, well, in 2004, and I asked you earlier about Fallujah 2004, when the Marines pushed through Fallujah in 2004 and cleaned it out, did an awesome job. But they had given warnings before they went in to get the civilians out of there. Well, some of the bad guys left too. A lot of guys, the bad guys that left went to Ramadi. You know, it's 30 miles away or something like that. It's pretty close. So after Fallujah was kind of secured by the Marines, Ramadi kind of became the epicenter of the insurgency. And then they were actually, when we showed up there, they were planning to do a big giant kinetic push through Ramadi, just the same way that they did in Fallujah. But the Iraqi government realized that if they did that, it was going to look bad, because what it would have been a bunch of Shia Iraqi army soldiers going in and fighting a bunch of Sunni, you know, insurgents, but surrounded by also Sunni populace. They knew it wasn't be a good idea, so decided to take a different approach and do it by true counterinsurgency, going in, setting up combat outposts throughout the city, and then trying to secure the local populace and then rid out the insurgents in a less kinetic way. And that's what we ended up doing. But it was brutal fighting. There was casualties just about every day. You know, we would be going to memorial services for the soldiers and Marines that were out there fighting every day. And it was a tough battle. So you know, we did our part, you know, and I always try and make it perfectly clear that what we did as SEALs, we were there, we were supporting. There was like 40 of us, you know, there was 5,600 soldiers and Marines in that brigade that was there on the ground. And obviously they did most of the fighting, and we just tried to help them out as much as we could.
And I think that was one of the big things for a lot of Marines. Whenever we saw American Sniper, whenever it first came out, I thought, it's making Marines look like fucking idiots a lot of the time. And it was almost like insulting on that behalf. Like, oh, yeah, we don't know what the fuck we're doing at all. Like, we're just out here. And did you – I know that so many SEALs I talk to have so much respect for Marine infantry units and things like that, and I'm sure you're the same way.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we were there with 3-8. And interestingly, even though Anbar province was owned by the Marine Corps, Ramadi was actually being run by the Army, and it was the 1-1 AD. When we got there, it was the 228 National Guard out of Pennsylvania, but then the 1-1 AD came and took over. But there was always a Marine Corps battalion, and we worked, I can't even, the admiration that all of us had for the soldiers and Marines that we worked with was another level. We love those guys. They're our brothers. You know, I went out and spoke to the 25th ID out in Hawaii, and the commanding general was one of the battalion commanders of the 1st of 506 when I was in Ramadi. And like, he introduced me to his troops, and, you know, he said like, hey, this guy is a SEAL, a combat veteran. He went through a bunch of things, and he goes, but I'm just going to introduce him as my brother. And that's the way we felt about all the soldiers and Marines that we worked with there. It was an unbelievable brotherhood.
And speaking of brotherhood, I think that one of the most special relationships that you have as an officer who is the commander of a unit is with your right-hand enlisted man on the side, and you have your team chief. Going through, and you have a lot of the military principles in your life right now that you still operate on, do you have a team chief type of person in your life that helps keeps you accountable, that's like, hey, man, you're not doing this right, let's clean this up a little bit, what do we got going on here? Do you have a team chief still?
Yeah, I mean, I've got, and what I really have is I got a bunch of them, because yeah. I got a bunch of different businesses, and every one of my businesses, you know, I've got a partner in that business, I've got a bro in that business, I got someone that's running things and taking care of things that, you know, they're the execution arm, right? And it allows me to kind of sit back, look at a broader area to find out what the next market's going to be, where we might fail. So it's, yeah, nothing's really changed. And, you know, my leadership consulting company, Echelon Front, it's a bunch of guys from Task Unit Bruiser in there. And, you know, that's there's really almost nothing that's changed. We're still doing what we've always done. Everyone's a leader in the team. Everyone's out making things happen. We all know the broad direction that we're heading. You know, I got a clothing manufacturing company up in Maine, and it's guys that I met in the civilian sector that are, you know, true American hard workers, you know, and that's, and they have a vision, they believe in the American dream. So, but they're up there running that, you know, they're up there running the factory with 70 people turning out products every day. I can't be there all the time, but same thing with a supplement company. It's like, oh yeah, the supplement team is out there shipping stuff, making stuff, creating stuff. I'm not in there every day, just like I wouldn't be, you know, telling one of my snipers which weapon to bring on an operation. I tell them what the mission is, and they go out, take ownership of it, and lead. So, yeah, the same principles that I used. And, you know, I got asked this the other day. I was at an event. So someone said, you know, you're doing all this stuff. How do you possibly get all this stuff done? And it's at an event where kind of everyone knows who I am. And I said, well, I actually have written books about this. The first book I wrote is called Talk About the Laws of Combat. The first law of combat is cover and move. Then simple, prioritize and execute and decentralize command. I said, you want to know how I'm doing all this stuff? It's those laws of combat that I use. I didn't just write about them so I could write about them. That's actually how I live. And they're effective. They work. And if you follow those laws of combat, they'll keep you alive on the battlefield. They'll get the mission done. And if you follow them in business and you follow them in your life, they're going to be effective for you. So that's what I do.
And with this most recent book, Leadership and Strategy Tactics, who do you think would benefit most from this book? Who out there do you think, here's, I would recommend
besides
this to you?
Besides Kate.
Besides, for sure, me. Yeah.
The book really, so I would recommend the book for people that have to interact with other human beings. So basically anyone, yeah. Because if you're interacting with other people, you're in a leadership position, and everyone's in a leadership position. I don't care if you're the frontline soldier, Marine, the frontline on a manufacturing, in a manufacturing plant, or frontline in a construction job, or frontline in the financial industry, even if you're not in charge of anybody at all, you're still leading. You're still trying to influence people. You're trying to influence your peers. You're trying to communicate up the chain of command so that you get the support that you need. life and interacting with other people is leadership. And so if you have to lead people, that's what this, that's what I wrote this book for. And the reason I wrote the book is I do all this leadership all the time. I talk about it on my podcast all the time. I work with all these different companies all the time. And I would get asked the same questions over and over and over again. And what I realized is that people fail to realize that leadership is there are skills in leadership. There's tools that you can use. There's strategies and tactics that you can implement that you can use to improve your situation as a leader. And you name them, the one you just asked me starting off, hey, what do you do with someone that's not motivated? Cool, there's a tool for that.
Right.
And it's in the book. You take that person, you put them in charge of something meaningful, and you put them, give them some ownership, give them some responsibility. They'll rise to the occasion. That's what'll happen. And by the way, that's not guaranteed to happen. Will happen 90% of the time, 10% of the time. Okay, we've got someone that truly doesn't want to do their job. All right, I'll put them in a situation where we mitigate them, where they don't have big influence, and eventually we'll get rid of them. So, all those little questions that I get asked over and over again,
yeah,
I answer on this book.
And your team and Cadence and how your team came up with the audiobook, because they send us a advanced copy of the audiobook, it grabs you right away because you have the slow military drumming coming in and it's the sound of the marching, and then your voice goes slow and you talk about some of the people and I'm just like, oh shit, here we go.
Yeah.
Like, he's talking slow, he's talking methodical, he's talking right to me. I need to get my shit together.
Yes, definitely worth checking out. Leadership and Strategy Tactics Field Manual. I for sure need to
So before we close out, we'd like to do a little bit of a speed round. So we have a speed round prepared for you. You ready?
Bring it.
All right.
We already kind of covered that you're not a lazy day guy, but you're forced to have one, and you can spend it anywhere on the planet. Where are you and what are you doing?
I'll be in my house. I'll go train jiu-jitsu. I'll get done with that, go surfing, play guitar, hang out with my kids, and eat a steak.
I didn't know you were a guitar player. Favorite song on the guitar?
Anything by Black Sabbath.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Bridge Over Troubled Water.
I thought he was a big Simon and Garfunkel guy.
Yeah.
No hot chow for a month or no hot showers for a month?
Are we eating hot chow all of a sudden?
What? Oh, wow. She gets in trouble for eating on here. We always say that chow is continuous, except for there's a pause on chow in the podcast
in the
studio.
Mic. All right. Saw on your Instagram, you're a Chick-fil-A guy. Best sauce? You can only have one.
You know, it was my son's in wrestling season right now. And when you cut weight and then you get done wrestling, you want to eat a lot. I went to Chick-fil-A because that's where he wanted to go. I don't even know what different sauces there are. I will say this. I got four of the basic chicken sandwiches.
Yeah.
And then I doubled up the meat onto two sandwiches.
Holy shit. Yeah.
That's a fucking flex.
I imagine.
That's what you need to lead in. Your next book needs to be like, look, if you want leadership lessons, eat two chicken patties on one Chick-fil-A sandwich with extra pickles.
Yeah. I imagine you could house some nugs over there. I was hoping you were going to say mayonnaise, by the way. That was my number one.
Extra pickles. You said extra pickles. And actually, in the picture that I posted, someone noticed that I took the pickles off because I don't like pickles.
Oh.
And then there was a bunch of comments. What kind of human being doesn't like pickles?
Oh, Why are you so soft? You don't like pickles, Jocko.
Yeah.
Why are you so soft?
Yeah. Isn't it
Your
crazy?
Your sensitive stomach can't handle the vinegar, Jocko. Yeah.
Isn't it crazy how people pick up
food? I don't want none.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness. Fuck, marry, kill. Green Berets, Marine Corps Recon, Space Force Laser Beam Team.
ask me this question again.
Fuck, marry, kill. Green Berets, Marine Corps Recon, Space Force Laser Beam Team.
I love the Marine Corps. I love the Army. And I don't know anything about the Space Force. And actually, what I'm bummed about is, instead of Space Force, to take this in a really serious direction, what we should have done is created a cyber force, like a hardcore cyber force of people that were trying to protect us from cyber attacks. So that's what, Space Force, hey, fine, but it seems like the Air Force could just extend their realm a little bit.
Do what they're already doing.
Yes, continue to do what they're doing.
It seems like Cyber Force would have been the better move, but maybe we'll get to that. So I'm sorry to ruin your funny question with a serious answer.
What about Space Force in the multi-cam uniforms? Do you like that or no? I thought they should have gone with sparkly black.
Yeah, I don't know. They should maybe take some Star Trek themed scenario, like maroon with a little insignia, something like that.
Yes, I agree. Biggest pet peeve in the gym?
Biggest pet peeve in the gym? Well, when I travel, I go to gyms that I would say my biggest thing about that I hate about gyms is when I go to gyms and they have no chalk rules.
No chalk rules?
You're not allowed to use chalk. Not allowed to chalk your hands.
Yeah,
and that bothers me, and I just do it anyways, and I try and keep it on you know, clandestine.
Right.
But I don't like when people don't let use chalk. It's, to me, it's a safety issue, and it bothers me. And my own personal house gym is covered in chalk, and that's the way I like it. So
there you
I
don't go.
Like. I thought you were gonna go curls in the squat rack.
What's that?
I thought you were gonna go curls in the squat rack.
Well, I mean, that's a universal, right.
universally
hated thing. I tried to give you one of my own personal. Anyone that sees people doing curls in the squat rack, you know, is filled with anger and hatred towards that person.
Right. Malcontent and discontent.
There you go. Finally, is there hope for me?
Well, that's a good question.
Oh, that hurts. There was hesitation.
A disappointed sandwich in the pod.
For you, you have a good time with your character, and you so that's a good way of sort of handling the fact that you're sleeping in and eating donuts. But I think that also that's going to start to creep in a direction where you say, you know what, I don't want that anymore.
Wow.
And you're going to get on the path. You're going to start to impose discipline in your world, and you're going to start to dominate in everything that you do. So
that
consider hope? I don't really consider hope a course of action. I don't think you need hope. I think you need discipline, and I think you're going to get some.
Oh,
damn, like that's a great way to close out.
All right.
Jocko, thank you so much for joining us. Our listeners are going to be thrilled to hear you on yet another platform. Good luck on your book, and we'd love to have you back again sometime.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, right on. Thanks for having me on, y'all, and thanks for your service, both of you. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank
too.
You.
Jocko, we want to thank him again to come on the show. Man, that was great taking his time. He's a very busy dude. But, Kate, I got to ask you, first of all, I have a couple questions. One, what the fuck was that?
I don't know, man. I totally shit the bed on this one.
I was like 3 seconds away from being like, where the fuck are we going?
I did like a
5 minute. If that was Cons, I'd give you so much more leeway. If that was Cons, I'd be like, where are we going here? Where are we going? Cons is going to listen to that and be so pissed. Like, I can't believe Chaps didn't cut me off there.
I did.
It was 5 minutes before Jocko said anything. I'm like watching you ramble. I'm like, Kate, please.
In my head.
He's going to hang
no,
up.
No, I'm not even talking about. The intro was fine. I'm talking about more the question that he said. You asked me 7 questions.
So all I wanted to ask him was, the bulk of the question was, how important is communication and leadership is what I wanted to get to. That simple nugget right there. Somehow, as I started talking, I stopped listening to what I was saying because I was just thinking in my head.
I'm just talking.
Yeah, you're just talking.
It ended up turning out great. Like, I obviously, if you listen to this show, we kind of have very different personalities than Jocko and how he approaches things.
Yeah.
I would like to say that if, say, somebody – no, I can't say that. I was going to make a baby joke, but I decided not to make a baby joke.
Okay.
That I would be like the seriousness of Jocko, the goofiness of you mixed in the middle.
Well, I thank God that he pointed it out. He was like, that was fucking weird. You know?
Yeah.
I'm glad that he wasn't polite about it.
That's the Navy SEAL side, though. You got to be direct. The best action to take is direct action.
Yeah.
You got to go sometimes. It was good. I liked having him on.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of times, you get this in military circles a lot. Like, if you are a person like Jocko and you have very strict rules about his life, and he does, and he's very open about it. I mean, you get up at 4:30 every day and you're trying to sweat before 4:45. You live by a very, very strict standard.
Yeah.
And there's people in finance, there's people in business who absolutely love that style. And it's very healthy for him to live that way. For me, it was much more healthy for me to step away from that type of style, because that's exactly what I was like when I was in the military.
Yeah.
When I was in the Marine Corps, that's exactly what I was like. I was waking up early, I was PTing, I was doing everything that I possibly could to be the best Marine version of myself. When I got out, in order to get into a healthy mental space, I had to step away from that.
Yeah.
It seems like it really works for Jocko, for his personality, just to keep pressing. For me, it would have been destructive for me to have that type of personality long after I left.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, there's like a happy medium in there somewhere. There's like a happy, but it works, obviously.
I should be a fat piece of shit. Maybe I should take back my response. I'm never going to run. Unless I'm late, I'm never going to run.
You know, in the end, when he was giving me that little speech, I swear to God,
genuinely in my head for a second, I was like, I'm going to get up tomorrow morning and run.
But you ran the other night.
And I ran the other night. So he's right, though. I am hitting a wall where I've become so disgusting that things are about to change, maybe.
And I think we have that rock bottom, that personal rock bottom.
Yeah.
I hit it when I stepped on a scale and I was like, God damn, dude, I'm 230 now. Like, yeah. And I walked by, my wife's still in good shape, my kids are outside and active, and I'm looking like the South Park meme behind it. And whenever we post pictures here, like, who's this fat fuck talking about the military?
Right.
This guy. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll cut back a little bit. And maybe I have we'll been. I'm down 15 pounds.
Well, it feels like Jocko caught us right at rock bottom, and my weird question was proof of that. So it can only go up from here, chaps.
Yep, and we're going to go up in this next round. Here we go. There's no better thing to talk about after you get off with Jocko than a little bit of military fitness.
This is true. Military fitness was never quite my thing. I gotta tell
you. You were in good shape. See, I think you do a little bit too much self-deprecating.
Right. I was ripped.
You were fast. All you right. were a good runner. What was your average PFT score, you think?
Like 290.
Yeah, see?
I was up at the top
there. That's good.
There.
Perfect score for those listening at home and don't know the Marine standards. 300 is perfect. 285, Superior Fitness Award.
Well, I always
superior
cheated.
Superior Fitness Katie is what they call you.
They did. I always cheated on the sit-ups for sure. I always made sure my partner was solid. But the rest, I was because I could run like a gazelle.
Well, the Commandant, I forget which one it said it, but he said if you don't get 100 crunches, then your buddy fucked you.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah.
I wish I could go back in time. There's a picture of me. So I lost a ton of weight at Paris Island. I was like skin and bones. Then I gained a shit ton of weight at MOS school when I had the freedom to eat whatever I wanted.
And you didn't lose the weight because it was super difficult training. It's because you're a super slow eater.
I'm a slow eater. And I like legit, I was like starving at boot camp. So then I went down to a size zero. I went back up to a size eight like immediately afterwards. And then I even back out when I got to Camp Pendleton, we did like two a days pretty much every day. We would PT in the morning and then in the afternoons. And I wish I had appreciated it. When I was in, I would go back in time and stop wearing these stupid one-piece suits that I would wear to hide my tramp stamp. But I look at this picture of me standing on Coronado Island with, like, San Diego in the background, and I have, like, the Madonna arms, like, that perfectly defined arms, and you can see that, like, my legs were like, I was in. I had, like, the babiest version of almost, I think, abs for the first time in my life. I could do a couple pull-ups. Like, that, I wish I could go back to that time because
think about it. You spend a lot less time looking at yourself in the mirror. When I was in super good shape, I used to take my shirt off and flex in the mirror all the time.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Intimidation.
Yeah. Look at me looking sexy as shit. And a lot of people want that military body, especially civilians. I think that's why Jocko's podcast is so successful, like, because a lot of the finance guys, the people who listen to those kind of shows, they see military, they see everybody clean cut, you look good in uniform, you're probably like a 32 or 34 inch waist if you're a guy, you probably have good lats and traps and shit like that, so they're thinking they must have a great diet, so they break down into a little bit of military diet, right?
Yeah, well, so we asked our followers, again, another thing, we asked them about the smells earlier, but we also asked them, do you think you're in better shape or worse shape now for the veterans who listen than you were when you were in? And overwhelmingly, a lot of the veterans said, I am in way worse shape now. And
I almost got mad that we put this poll up on Twitter because I was like, this is the most obvious answer. We're just going to make everybody feel bad.
Right.
Like, this isn't going to be a fat shaming veteran thing.
That was my goal. 53% said worse. 13% said, nah, I've always been hot patootie. So good for you guys. And 18% said, I've never been fit. Not when I was in, not now.
So we have 18% of Navy listeners.
Yeah, that's it. 18% of Navy burned. So most say they're not in as good a shape now. I know I for sure have been just on a horrible downward spiral ever since. But from the military times, fad diets come and go, as do the accompanying promises to fix weight issues or gym struggles that in nearly every case could be addressed by simple, healthy exercise and diet. So cue this latest fad. The military diet is what they are calling a groundbreaking eating regimen largely built on the foundation of, drumroll please, not eating.
Yeah.
And this is from the website militarydiet.com. It's this new site that popped up. They're trying to be the next, like, what's another, like, the beach diet or whatever was.
The
Atkins diet. So this military diet. And it turns out the creators have no military ties at all. It's endorsed by zero individuals with credibility. And the site lists its primary source of foundational science is that they used Wikipedia. So this is like a new diet fad that's starting to catch on. And this is what they're calling for. Day one, breakfast. Half a grapefruit, one slice of toast, 2 tablespoons peanut butter, coffee. Lunch, half cup of tuna, one slice of toast. Dinner, 3 ounces of meat. That's it. Green beans, half a banana, small apple, 1 cup vanilla ice cream. And then, so the next day,
800 calories.
Basically nothing. It's like, I feel like they looked at what happens when the Navy, when they get put on bread and water, and were like, this is what you do. So it's the same thing for days 2 and 3, except dinner is just like 2 hot dogs without a bun, 1 cup of broccoli, half cup vanilla ice cream. And I'm like, this isn't a military diet at all. Like, if you are like Jocko Willink and those guys, you're probably eating almost 3,000 calories a day, probably.
Right.
If you're working your ass off, you're actually like eating a ton. So I would not follow this military diet. But I think it's one of those things where people see it's called the military diet.
Like,
and so they just
work.
Blindly follow it, blindly believe it. Where in real life, if I was to put you on a military diet, I know for me, when I was in, cigarettes.
Yeah.
Monsters. I drank.
Green or blue?
Green.
Oh yeah,
I was a big green monster lady.
Whenever I saw somebody that would drink a monster and it was blue, I'm like, you pussy.
I remember. I've always been, after I got out, like, I dabble in that. I like things that make you feel different. I remember the first time in the military, it was the first time I like chugged a monster and I could feel my heart start beating fast. And I was like, what is this magic?
And you don't think about how much sugar it is.
Yeah.
I remember whenever I was a company gunny, I lived off of monsters.
Yeah.
Monsters and Baconators were what I basically lived off of. And that feeling in your brain on monster number 2 of the day, if you crush it by like 11, you're like, I wish a bitch would walk by.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
even give a fuck what they did, but I'm about to eat their soul.
Yeah, I wish a motherfucker would. I remember going on a road trip with my Marine
buddy.
That
was basically my motto as company guy. I wish a motherfucker would.
I wish a bitch would. Cigarettes, monsters, milkshakes from the commissary. They had this milkshake machine. And every morning after PT, I'd be like, even if I only had like 5 minutes to get where I had to go, I'd be like screeching my car in to get a milkshake. So unhealthy. Monsters, cigarettes, milkshakes, and so much Domino's.
You are the definition of a food blister.
Yes.
That's what you were.
It literally, that is what I lived off of. I would go to the chow hall. We'd be like, lasagna Fridays. Like, everybody'd be super pumped. Or buffalo chicken salad, like Wednesdays is our hot ticket item. But that, by and large.
I love that you still remember the days.
Oh, my God.
Lasagna Fridays.
We would go like sprinting into the chow hall in those days. It was like hot. But Domino's. And this reminded me, we were talking about it last night, constantly there's always a Domino's delivery person coming or going from any given barracks at any given time.
Yeah.
It never ends. And when I was in, there was this super viral video, and we were talking about it last night, it reminded me, so I looked it up again. The video has almost 1 million views now.
And I'm shocked that I had never heard of it.
I couldn't believe you hadn't, because our guy Kyle had heard of it, a couple of my other buddies. I was like, do you remember this? They're like, oh my God, yes. We used to watch this all the time. It's this Marine with a guitar. And he's on the deck of one of the barracks as this pizza delivery lady is coming up with the pizza. And she's trying to deliver it and paying for it. And he sings her this song and it like follows her with the guitar singing to her. And I'm going to have Bren play it because this is a big part of my Marine Corps experience was the pizza lady dropping off our pizza.
The pizza lady here with the pizza. Pizza lady. There's a light for your cameras, man, it's all right. She brings a pizza love, pizza lady. Angus, hurry up, the pizza lady needs her cash and her tip.
Yes, have a good
lady, mission completed. Pizza lady fucking rocks. In my life, I need your pizzas all day and all night. Oh, pizza lady, fucking track star. Look how fast pizza lady roams. Pizza lady, you bring love and every bite. I never miss a crumb. Pizza lady, don't you go, pizza lady. Don't you know I need your love? Your pizza lady.
You ate pizza. I tried to do a lot of eating as healthy as I possibly could with little to no knowledge how to do it at all.
Right.
I remember getting to Okinawa and I was very skinny and I wanted to get bigger. I wanted to be muscular for like the first time in my life. I ate so many peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I bought so many containers of muscle milk banana.
All the guys had muscle milk, right?
You call it muscle milk, I'm fucking in. I don't know what the nutritional facts of it are or anything like that, but I was so in. The muscle milk farts, my God.
Yes.
They were absolutely brutal. And that was still, you could do Androstenedione and what was the other one? Androstenedione and creatine. Like, I would mix those together. I was taking all kinds of shit. And when they took one of my big, basically steroids off from GNC in Okinawa, I was so upset.
You were. Old photos, you were fucking ripped. But, like, you looked in any, on field day, any of the guys' rooms, and they have those big old containers of, like, no explode and, like, all this shit.
Well, I did that even before I started working here.
Yeah.
I had this huge, it had to have been, like, a 7 or 8 pound thing of, like, protein that was snickerdoodle flavor.
Yeah. Oh.
And my wife came in, it was only about a year and a half ago now, and I've been here for 3 years. So 2 years basically untouched. And she came and she's like, Matthew, can I throw this thing away?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
Once you become a veteran, they just sit on top of your fridge collecting dust.
I actually have a really funny muscle milk fart story.
Go on.
The Super Bowl, the Pittsburgh Steelers and Arizona Cardinals Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a big Super Bowl party at my cousin's house, and in the fridge they had like probably like 48. Like, they stocked up on them big, like a ton of muscle milks, and I must have drank like 4 or 5 of them during the
gross,
Super Bowl.
Dude.
Riding back home after the Super Bowl was over, and the farts start to hit me, and they are hitting me hard, like really hard, and I am cracking up because I'm
everybody
making my family suffer.
Everybody else hates you, yeah.
And I laughed so hard that I threw up on myself, and then I just started laughing even more. And my parents were not happy with it, but I couldn't care less because it was honestly one of the hardest I've ever laughed in my entire life.
Five muscle milks.
Strawberry. I prefer strawberry, but I definitely mixed it. It was probably like 2 strawberry, vanilla, and I just drank so much muscle milk. Just the most ever.
Yeah, you would fit right in at the barracks, my friend.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's move on to round number 4. Round number 4. So this last summer, I took my family to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a dream vacation for me. I never thought whenever I was growing up that I'd be like in a financial position to be able to go on a trip to Hawaii and like all the flights and the hotels and things like that. And it was a once in a lifetime type of experience for me and my family. That being said, we wanted to take some of the historical sites in, and obviously whenever you go to Hawaii, Pearl Harbor is one of those spots.
Yeah.
And going to the actual memorial where at Pearl Harbor, it opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one, it was, you see it on movies, you see it in movies like Pearl Harbor and documentaries, and you read it about it in history books, but whenever you're there, it kind of puts you in a different spot, kind of like if you go to the 9/11 memorial here. Like, once you're standing on the ground of where it actually happened, you can kind of feel what's going on
around
you.
Whole new perspective.
Right. And I remember going through, they have plaques of different heroes of that day. Because imagine what it must have been like whenever you were just working, you're going about your normal business like so many people do in bases across America. Even now, they do those type of things. And then you're attacked and you have no idea that it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that instantaneous reaction. You have fight or flight. And so many people that day rose up and did heroic things. Many of them were named. Many of them aren't named. And for a long time, the person that we're going to talk about here wasn't named.
Right. Big, huge deal this week, and this is coming to us from NPR. The U.S. Navy says it will name an aircraft carrier after Doris Dory Miller, the African-American mess attendant who heroically leapt into combat during the Pearl Harbor bombing. It marks the first time that an aircraft carrier has been named for an African-American and the first time a sailor has been so honored for actions taken as an enlisted man. And you talked about him not being named for a long time. I was watching, there's a lot of TV reports about it over the weekend and everything, because the ship naming, it was on Monday, Martin Luther King Day. And that they pulled up all these old newspaper articles that just, they said, this hero was just.
They said on the article and even on the plaque at Pearl Harbor, it said like the original news stories were unnamed Negro sailor.
Sailor, yeah. Unnamed Negro sailor was all they wouldn't even put his name in the papers because he was black. And so in 1941,
Miller was a 22-year-old mess attendant on the USS West Virginia. At the time, black sailors were consigned to roles that entailed swabbing decks, cooking, and shining officers' shoes. He had awoken at 6 a.m. and was collecting laundry when the Japanese attack began and an alarm sounded on the ship. Miller headed to the anti-aircraft battery magazine, but it had already been destroyed by torpedo damage. He proceeded to the deck, where he was assigned to carry his wounded comrades, including the ship's captain. Miller was strong. A former high school football player in Waco, Texas, he was the ship's heavyweight boxing champion. Miller went topside, carried wounded on his shoulders, made several trips up and down, wading through waist-deep water, oil-slick decks, struggling uphill on slick decks, Navy Rear Admiral John Fuller said in 2016. Have you ever visited these ships? Have you ever gone on a tour on a Navy ship?
Yep.
Even in the best conditions, when they have them all set for tourists with like extra gripping on the ladders right. and stairs, it's still scary and still dangerous and yeah. still like, I can't even imagine navigating that with someone on my back with things covered in oil, with bombs dropping all around you. So after he is carrying people to and from safety and doing all that, the young sailor then took over a 50 cal anti-aircraft machine gun and fired it until the ammunition ran out. No matter what, he had never been trained on that weapon. So, like, he just jumped up there and did it, even though he had no idea. It wasn't hard, he said in one report. I just pulled the trigger and she worked fine. I had watched the others with these guns.
I love it that he called the weapon she.
Yep, there she goes.
I fucking love it.
I guess I fired her for about 15 minutes. I think I got one of those Japanese planes. They were diving pretty close to us. Just matter of fact, yeah, I just hopped up there. It wasn't that hard. Took him out. The ship's communications officer said that Miller was blazing away as though he had fired one all of his life. The ship was heavily damaged in the attack. Japanese planes had dropped armored bombs and launched multiple torpedoes on the vessel. It slowly sank, and more than 100 of the men aboard that ship died. For his bravery, Miller was presented with the Navy Cross in May 1942. He was the first black sailor to be awarded the medal, one of the Navy's highest honors. This marks the first time in this conflict that such high tribute has been made in the Pacific Fleet to a member of his race, and I'm sure that the future will see others similarly honored for brave acts, said Admiral Chester Nimitz, the commander of the U.S. Pacific Fleet at the time. And it makes you wonder how many were not recognized for their acts of bravery at the time. And I bet there are thousands and thousands of stories from all of our wars where African Americans and people of color were not recognized or were not reported for their deeds. But I am so glad that he ended up passing away. He did not survive the war. Miller was aboard the USS Liscombe Bay when it was struck by a Japanese torpedo in the Pacific in 1943. Nearly 650 of more than 900 sailors on board died that day when the ship sank and Miller's body was never recovered. So, I mean, just to know that even during his time and his short life, he didn't realize that, you know, he never got to live to see that he has an aircraft carrier named after him now. And I think there's only 11 in our fleet. So it's a huge deal to have one of those named after you. And I think it's way overdue, but I think hopefully with this story coming out and all the attention it got, hopefully more stories start coming out too, because I bet you there are just countless thousands of acts of heroism and bravery that have gone unrecognized because they were people of color and the way things were at the time, which is unfortunate. So really happy that Doris Dory Miller has been recognized for this.
No doubt, much deserved. It was interesting to see how many, whenever I tweeted out that we had Jocko on, how many people were like, worlds are colliding. I like that.
I like that too. I think
it's a different, very different perspective of what we normally do.
If he got stuck on a desert island with me, I think it would be his hell on earth. But I also
and yours.
He was and mine. He was such a good sport and so much fun. So I'm really glad that we finally got to.
When we were watching on the Skype feed, because he was on Skype. Whenever we were watching the Skype feed, and he would crack a smile and like turn away, it was like, "We got you. We gotcha."
Such a treat. But again, thanks to him for coming on. And next week we have, if you follow Pop Smoke Official on Instagram, he's got I think like 250,000 followers. He does comedy. He also has been working to get compensation for burn pit issues. Mm-hmm. So I was talking about that smell earlier in the show. So Daniel will be on next week from Pop Smoke Official. So looking forward to that next week. A lot of good stuff coming up.
And again,
that'll be great. We also have some congressmen lined up. I know we're going to have Will Hurd. We're going to have a couple others as well, too. Big things coming down the pipe. This has been a big, big year for Zero Block 30, like as far as growth and everything. And coming from myself as like a former Marine staff sergeant to come on this show and have this platform and the people listen to the show and listen every week and follow along, it's awesome. I know you being a Marine corporal, like you love it too. Like we never thought we'd be in this position. Captain Cons, who was a West Point graduate and things like that. For us to be up here and run our mouths and be able to talk to people like Jocko and congressmen and things like that, it's very special. And it's something that we don't take for granted.
Indeed it is. And if you want more, you can check out our old episodes or our YouTube page, Zero Block 30 is on YouTube.
And we'll put the whole episode of, we'll put Jocko's entire interview on the YouTube page as well. So you can see him smile. It doesn't happen much, but he did it today.
And you can watch my face as I struggle again through that very long, weird question.
Yeah, Bryn, why don't we do that one? Just go in, zoom in on Kate whenever she's asking that.
We'll do it. I'm working on it right now.
That'll be great. Oh. All right, let's move into a little bit of save rounds and alibis. We'll start with you, Captain Cons. What do you got? I normally would say nothing, but I am going to let him. He said that he wants to give a special shout out to Eli Manning on a Hall of Fame career in true Cons fashion. He made it about himself. He met Eli one time, and credit to Bryn for being gym guys who are both care about their health. That's what Cons says.
Eli did roast him, though. He included that Eli roasted him because Cons was like, hey, if you ever need anybody to throw the ball around with you, and then Eli was like, they run the option at Army. No thanks.
Yeah. So, a little football burn there.
That is a little football burn. Kate?
I have been thinking a lot since the interview with Jocko about fixing my life and getting, maybe finding out where my car is over in Astoria. And maybe...
It's gone. I mean, just resign yourself to the fact that it's gone.
Maybe going for a jog. I was going to go play basketball tonight with a coworker here. But then on Twitter, a couple stoolies reached out and were like, come join our bocce beer league. So maybe I'll...
That's tough.
Still exercise.
Yeah.
So bocce ball's great exercise. I think Jocko would be proud.
Yeah.
Joining a bocce league.
Yeah.
That's it.
That will be good. Mine is there's new...
Oh, I don't get one? Can I?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Brent. Sorry.
I changed my phone to military time.
Whoa!
What hard-o. Motivator.
Producer first class.
So now that I'm trying to fully embrace the bit, what are some small things that I can change about my life that would be like I'm in the military?
We got to get you a pair.
Or is that too much stolen valor?
One, when we get done with the show, I'll write Bryn a no-shave chit.
Write him a no-shave chit. I'll get him some dog tags. There's an RV Navy store down the block that you can wear outside of your hoodie. And
Go ask any one of the literal thousands of people who are mad that we roasted the people in Richmond. They can give you some military clothes.
Speaking of, do we want to hit up Firewatch for the weekend?
Yeah, Firewatch.
We need to assign Firewatch.
That's
too.
True. So we did a little bit of a roast. We didn't even mention what was going on in Richmond, like the political scene behind it, anything like that. We make fun of people all the time on this show.
Yes.
And it was amazing to me when we posted this video on our Instagram page of us talking about the protesters in Richmond who are marching for Second Amendment rights and great cause. Do whatever you want to do there. Take advantage of your ability to protest and protest your rights as much as you want to. This too will defend. That's part of being an American is the ability to protest. But if you do it and you're dressed like a goober, don't get fucking mad say that you're dressed like a goddamn goober.
Yeah.
You're dressed like a goober. Dude with a 50 cal was dressed like a goober.
And we had more comments. We had like 1,000 comments on us roasting those outfits, those like military cosplay outfits.
You guys must hate freedom.
It's like, no, shut up.
Shut up.
And I don't get mad. Watch. You know how many go through. If that's one of you, go through any time my picture is on there, somebody's going to call me fat.
Right.
I don't get upset when people call me chubby. I understand it. It's an accurate statement.
Mm.
I'm a little fluffy.
Okay.
Okay. I have a little bit of Winnie the Pooh in me.
Right.
So what? I don't get upset, but they got all mad. And you know, there's hypocrisy and it is run amok.
It's true.
Do you know why? Because two posts later, we post a one-off of a guy who was wearing the same type of military gear.
It's like airsoft
and
stuff.
All those people who were upset, they came back to the post and they roasted that guy because he was buying lonesome.
So all you... I was going to say, to a protest wacky outfit defenders, you have Firewatch this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to put all of you on Firewatch. You have all the gear. Enjoy wearing your gear while you're on Firewatch, bitch.
Recruit, whatever your name is. I know you have no Firewatch, therefore I fixed that tonight.
Hi, sir. And I also have a save round.
Yeah, you do.
I was wondering. I was like, all right.
I didn't even save my save round. I got fired up there.
Yeah, I know. My goodness.
My goodness gracious. Unbecoming. I was
unbecoming of staff.
Relax. Oh, that's probably my MO anyways. But my save round is they're trying to go a little bit through the regulations about service animals. And I think that it's good. Like people, because I used to be really involved in helping training some service animals. For those that are new to listeners, my old job in the Marine Corps was to be a dog handler. I was a dog handler for years and was pretty good at it. So whenever I deal with dogs, I kind of know what I'm doing. There's new regulations that you're going to have a professionally trained service animal in order to bring them on a plane. So that'll hopefully stop people bringing like their service chickens, their Llama. Service ducks, and like their service pigs and things like that. But there is one part of me that has a little bit of reservation because we've worked with an organization like Canines for Warriors. If you go to a legitimate source and if there's only certain ones that are allowed to give this licensing, that it could become a cost burden for people. Because the price of one of these dogs, a service dog, can reach 15, 20 grand in order to do that. So you're going to kind of cost a lot of people out who might need help. That's my only real reservation about having this, is that you might have people who need a service dog, somebody suffering from PTSD, somebody suffering from a traumatic brain injury, or whatever they're going through, even if it's not military related, if it's civilian related issues, they might struggle to find that funding. So hopefully they find a balance in the new regulations and laws and restrictions where it also helps people who don't have the financial means to get a dog if they actually need one. So that's my kind of concern for this week.
There
all
you
those
go.
People that are out there. And I want to give another call to arms as far as our little birds. There's I think it was last year whenever I said I wanted to be like the
gossip girl. Lance Corporal Underground.
Yeah, a little bit of Lance Corporal Underground, where we get a little bit of the scuttlebutt that's going around. Last night, I got a message from somebody that's in 2nd Marine Regiment. The commander there, the 2nd Marine Regiment commander, is wanting platoon commanders to move into the barracks with their platoon. And my God.
Oh, wow.
That would be fucking terrible. And the reason why, they said it's because they've had a drug and gun problem in the barracks. Mm. And people are pissing and shitting in the parking garages by the barracks as well. So in order to curb that, they're going to make the platoon commanders go in there. Oh, I don't know what a second lieutenant's going to do in that case. First lieutenant.
They think it will strengthen the bond of the Marines. My God, I would love to be a fly on the wall.
Is that worse for the platoon or the platoon commander?
The platoon commander.
I think platoon commander,
That sucks. Oh, God. Yeah,
that would be the worst.
Keep us updated, little bird. Tell us how that goes.
I want to know how that goes.
Indeed. And also, pissing in the elevators. My final barracks that I lived in had, there was five
you
stories.
Shit in the elevator?
So they put, I always shit in the elevator. Yep. It was my little MO. It was like my calling card. I was like the wet bandits of shitting in the elevators.
Sound the retreat.